been looking at places where we get stuck. Again, these are places that we've all been stuck in, and some may be even now. We began 2 weeks ago, weren't here last week, looking at grief, and as with all the other places where we get stuck, try to understand what grief is. Grief, of course, is an emotion. It's the feeling and experience of sorrow and sadness. It's a form of inward pain, form of inward suffering and distress. It's an inward commotion. It's also an emotion that we experience as the result of an event, result of something that has taken place. And we saw that grief, of course, may include feelings of emptiness, feelings of loneliness and confusion. Again, it's something that is triggered. It's something that has a source. And Jesus said in John 16 and 33, "In the world you shall have tribulation." And these, of course, are sources of grief. And we saw that grief is common. Everyone experiences grief at some point in their lives. And also, grief is necessary. It is something that is necessary for us. And then we saw that there are several Bible examples that reveal some truths about grief. First of all, no one is above the experience of grief. Jesus is referred to in Isaiah 53 as the man of sorrows. So no one is above grief. We see also there are degrees of the feelings of grief, and we looked at several passages to show that there are various degrees of grief. Also, there are degrees of duration. There are some griefs that we may get over in a couple of days, a week, maybe a few hours. There are other griefs that are with us for the remainder of our life upon earth. And we try to make it clear that these griefs that are with us for the rest of our lives, I mean, they're always in our hearts. That doesn't mean that a person is stuck in grief. That's just the nature of grief. There's things that just will be with us the rest of our lives. And so there are degrees of duration. We've seen also that grief, of course, is very, very powerful. Psalmist talks about being consumed in grief. So it has the power to consume. Psalmist also talks about being surrounded by grief. So it has the power to surround us. It has the power to break us. It has the power to hurt us. So grief is very, very powerful, but it is something that we must bear. In the book of Jeremiah, if we turn there, Jeremiah chapter 10 and verse 19, we see the book following Jeremiah is the Lamentations of Jeremiah. That is, he was a man of many griefs, a man of many sorrows. In Jeremiah chapter 10 in verse 19, he said, "Woe is me for my hurt." Again, grief has the power to hurt. "My wound is grievous." Again, that talks about a great degree of grief. "But I said, truly this is a grief, and I must bear it, and I must bear it. And that's true. When we experience the emotion of grief, it's not something that, though many have tried, it's not something you can run away from. It's not something that you can escape. It is something that we must deal with. It is something that we must bear. And though it may never go away, there are ways to bear or to carry that grief. In Galatians chapter 6, speaking of the fact that we have to bear our grief, in Galatians 6, in verse 2, he says, "Bear ye one another's burdens." That is, we're to help one another in the hour of grief, but that still doesn't diminish. That still doesn't take away the fact that we individually must bear our own griefs. In verse 5, it says, "For every man shall bear his own burden." It is true, we're to bear the burdens of others, but every man shall bear his own burden. And that is the nature of grief. That brings us to the act of grieving. There is grief, which is the sorrow and the sadness, the inward pain, and then there is grieving, which of course is the reaction to the sorrow. It is the expression and the feeling, the expression of the feeling of sadness and sorrow. John 11 in verse 35, we read those two words, "Jesus wept." And by so doing, he demonstrated the importance and even the necessity of expressing grief. Grief must be expressed. And that, of course, is grieving. Job spoke of his grieving. Notice in the book of Job, chapter 3, we're going to look at many verses tonight, but Job 3, verse 24, says, talking about his grieving, he says, "For my sighing cometh before I eat, and my roarings are poured out like the waters." He's talking about his grieving. In the book of Job, chapter 16, and verse 16, he says, "My face is foul with weeping, and on my eyelids is the shadow of death." And then in Job chapter 30, and verse 31, he said, "My harp," which would be joy, "my harp also is turned to mourning, and my organ into the voice of them that weep." Job could not get away from his grief. It's not something that you just put out of your mind. And it affected his entire life. It affected everything he did. And even his harp was turned to mourning, and his organ into the voice of them that wept. Again, he's talking about grieving. The psalmist often spoke upon grieving as well. In Psalm 6 and verse 6, he said, "I am weary with my groaning. All the night make I my bed to swim. I water my couch with my tears." Again, this is the act of grieving. These individuals aren't stuck there And that's what we want to make clear. You're stuck in grief when you can't live your life, when you can't function for long period of time. Then you're stuck. But to express grief and to have sorrow in your heart for the rest of your life does not constitute being stuck. And weeping does not constitute being stuck. And calling to remembrance does not constitute being stuck. And we see this in Job, and we see it in the psalmist as well. In Psalm 102 and verse 9, Psalm 102 and verse 9, the psalmist says, "For I have eaten ashes like bread and mingled my drink with weeping." I have eaten ashes like bread and mingled my drink with weeping. Again, this speaks of the act of grieving. And the Bible is full of examples of grieving. The Bible is full of examples of mourning. And these examples show us that not only are there degrees of grief, there are also degrees of grieving. But one thing that I have noticed, and certainly we see this in the book of Job with Job's friends, when you grieve, when you outwardly express your grief, it's a shame, but it's true. There's no denying it. When you do that, and I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. When we do that, we leave ourselves open to be judged. Shouldn't be so. But again, Job's friends serve as an example. God's people many times are terrible when it comes to judging those who grieve. Gets back to being Pharisees. We should learn valuable lessons from Job's friends. People can say some they may not mean to, but people can say some very, very hurtful things when someone is grieving. Many times it's best just to keep your mouth shut and just be there. And again, Job's friends are a good example. We also need to be very, very careful. Again, Job's friends, they figured Job's been grieving long enough. It's time to stop. And they set a timetable on when Job's grieving should stop. And when it didn't stop according to their timetable, they began to make their judgments. They began to cast accusations. We got to be careful. We got to be very, very, very careful that we don't set timetables. That's not for you and I to do. And don't judge someone on their initial reaction to a tragedy. That's unfair. And that's what happened again with Job. And we need to be very, very careful. But throughout the Bible, we see examples of people who grieved, and usually associated with death. And that, of course, is one of the most common griefs, is the experience of the death of a loved one. But we want to look at several scriptures again. There are many, many examples of God's people grieving over those who have passed on. In the book of Genesis, chapter 23 and verse 2, we have Abraham grieving for Sarah. And Sarah died in Kirjath Arba, same as Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. He came to grieve. He came to express what he was feeling in his heart. In the book of Genesis chapter 37, we have Jacob grieving for Joseph. Now, his grief was based upon the fact that he jumped to a conclusion. But in Genesis 37, begin reading with verse 33, "And he knew it and said, It is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces." Jacob, as soon as he saw that coat, immediately he was filled with grief. And he expressed his grief. "And Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, For I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning. Thus his father wept for him." Then we have Joseph mourning the death of Jacob in Genesis chapter 50 and verse 10. "And they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond Jordan, and there they mourned with a great and very sore." Sore, of course, would refer to that which is painful and agonizing. "With a great and very sore lamentation," which is weeping, sobbing, moaning. "And he made a mourning for his father 7 days. Then we have Israel grieving for Aaron in the book of Numbers, chapter 20. The book of Numbers, chapter 20, and verse 29. "When all the congregation saw that Aaron was dead, they mourned for Aaron 30 days. Now, Joseph mourned for Jacob 7 days. We see here Israel for Aaron for 30 days. There's no time limit. There's no time limit. "Even all the house of Israel." Then you have Israel grieving for Moses. Notice in Deuteronomy chapter 34. Deuteronomy chapter 34, verses 7 and verse 8. "And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. And the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. So the days of weeping and mourning for Moses were ended." You know, even after 30 days, or after 7 days, or however many days, that the crying may stop, the grief is still there. The grief is still within heart, and occasionally that person is going to grieve. Again, it may be a birthday, it may be many, many things. It could be something you see, it could be something you hear, and it just brings up that grief that's already there, because it never goes away. It never goes away. But again, that doesn't mean that a person is stuck in grief. The daughters of Israel mourning for the daughter of Jephthah. Notice in the book of Judges, chapter 11. Book of Judges, chapter 11, verse 40. That the daughters of Israel went yearly to lament the daughter of Jephthah, the Gileadite, 4 days in a year. They went yearly to lament the daughter of Jephthah. They did this every year. And again, same today, people may visit a cemetery and they grieve and they express their grief. That doesn't mean they're stuck. Doesn't mean that at all. Again, it just shows that grief is something that doesn't go away. It's not something that just disappears. Some griefs do, but some don't. David for Saul and Jonathan in 2 Samuel chapter 1. 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 17. And David lamented with his lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan, his son. Then you have David and the people for Abner. Notice in 2 Samuel chapter 3. Again, there's so many examples throughout the Bible of grieving. In 2 Samuel 3, verses 31 and 32, and David said to Joab and to all the people that were with him, rend your clothes and gird you with sackcloth and mourn before Abner. And King David himself followed the bier or the casket. And they buried Abner in Hebron. And the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And then perhaps one of the saddest examples is David grieving over his son Absalom. In 2 Samuel chapter 18, 2 Samuel 18, verse 33, and the king was much moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. As he went thus, he said, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son. And it was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned in the morning unto all the people, for the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son. And then we have the example of Mary and Martha and the people and their friends and family in John chapter 11 and verse 33. John 11, verse 33. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. That's the feeling of grief. There in John 11, verse 33, with Jesus, he groaned in the spirit, that is within, and he was troubled. And then the grieving, verse 35, Jesus wept. But again, we see also Martha and Mary and those who had gathered around. And then lastly, as an example, in the book of Acts, chapter 8, verse 2, we have the church grieving for Stephen. In verse 2, and devout men carried Stephen to his burial and made great lamentation over him. And made great lamentation over him. Now, some of these examples, they were grieving over saved people, certainly here in Acts 8, verse 2. They were grieving over saved people who had passed on, saved people who had died. When a saved person passes away, that doesn't mean that there's no grief. I mean, people will make very foolish and ignorant statements when they say, well, I don't know what you're crying for. He was saved or she was saved or whatever. There's still that grief. There's still that pain. Yes, we know that person is gone to be with the Lord, and we know that everything is better for them, but there's still, again, that pain because of a loss that has been experienced. And there are people who you and I have known that have gone many, 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 many years ago, and we still, if we think about them, we still have a grief in our heart because that we miss them. Yes, we know they're in heaven, but the grief is still there. It never goes away. And so, again, being stuck in grief is really hard to define. But grieving can take on many, many forms. It, of course, can begin with a period of shock, numbness. There may be intense crying. There may be even collapse. And people will look at someone who is grieving and they just collapse. And then the Pharisee will say, look at them. They don't have any faith at all. That's a Pharisee. I'm not even going to go there. But there may be a period of prolonged sorrow. There may be a period of withdrawing. There may be a period of apathy. There may be a period of restlessness. Grief can take on many, many, many different forms. You cannot put it, and I know many do, but you cannot put grief in a rigid, expected order. Okay, this is what you do the first 10 days, and this is what you do next, and then on and on. And if you've ever seen the stages of grief, and if you've ever grieved, you will find that you don't follow that. It's not rigid. You'll find it loops. It loops back. Yes, you may advance to, I don't put much in the stages of grief, but you may advance to the fourth stage, but next day you may be back to number one because it loops. That's the way grief works. So we have to be very careful not to put it in a, okay, this person has this long to grieve and then they need to get over it. Don't do that. Don't do that to anybody. And that's what many do. And then, of course, just like with all these places where we can get stuck, and true with everything in this life, there are dangers. There are dangers in grief. And there are dangers in grieving. And the reason there are dangers is because of our human nature. There are dangers. And we must be aware of that. If we are grieving, we personally have to be aware of dangers. And there are dangers. In Job chapter 6, notice Job chapter 6 and verse 10. Job 6, verse 10. Then should I yet have comfort, yea, I would harden myself in sorrow. That's a danger. That is a danger. I will harden myself in sorrow. Let him not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One. And then, of course, sin. I'm not saying that grief is a sin. I'm not saying that grieving is a sin. I am saying that there is the danger that we do sin. There is the danger that we sin in our grief. There is a danger that we sin in our grieving. And we have to be aware of that. In the book of Job, chapter 1, very familiar verse. Again, Job has experienced unbelievable grief. And he In verse 20, Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head, fell down upon the ground and worshiped. And we see in all of this, in verse 22, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. And that is a danger. Now Job, you read the book of Job, Job did not always say the right thing in his grief. Didn't always say the right thing. Didn't always say the scriptural thing. You got to give people who are grieving, you got to give them a little liberty. They may say something that isn't so. And it's not your job at that moment to correct them. You have to give them some liberty in their grieving. You and I, if we're overcome with grief, it's hard to say what we might say originally. The Lord may convict us of it, and we get it right with Him. But again, you got to be careful not to be so quick to judge someone who has just experienced a great loss. They may say things that just aren't so. They may say things that aren't scriptural. And there is a danger. You and I have to realize that there is a danger that we sin in our grief. There is a danger that we charge God foolishly, that we blame God, that we accuse God. So that is a danger. That's a danger because, again, of who we are. Now, there is a difference between the sorrow of the saved and the sorrow of the unsaved. The initial reaction may be the same. Much of the grieving process may be the same, but there is a difference. 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 13, it says that you sorrow not, even as others which have no hope. Notice it's not sorrow not. That's not what it says. Nowhere in the Bible do you find the teaching, even implied, that we are not to sorrow. Nowhere. We have example upon example of people who grieved. But it says that ye sorrow not even as others, which have no hope. What's the difference? The difference is hope. Hope is assurance. And what makes the difference, and it makes a huge difference in a child of God, is that hope, that assurance that we have. And of course, the Bible has much to say about this hope, this assurance. This hope is vibrant. In 1 Peter 1 and verse 3, it is called a lively hope. That is, it's active. It endures. We have a confidence, and our confidence is based upon God. Our confidence is based upon who God is, upon who Christ is. Our confidence is based upon the Word of God and the promises of God. So we have a foundation, a solid foundation of confidence. And that confidence, that hope, is lively. It works within us. And it does help us in the hour of sorrow. Again, the grief may be unbearable, but that hope, that confidence can carry us through. When Jesus spoke of living water in John 4 and verse 10 and in John 7 and verse 38, he was referring to something that was flowing as opposed to something that's stagnant. And that's what this hope is. It this confidence that we have, it's flowing. It's not stagnant. And it does make a difference. This hope, this confidence gives us peace of heart and of mind. I didn't say it takes away the grief, but it gives a sense of peace. It gives a peace of heart and a peace of mind. we read all through the Word of God, particularly the book of Job and the book of Psalms, about songs in the night. Job 35 and verse 10, Psalm 42 verse 8, and many other psalms. Songs in the night. And it's that hope, it's that confidence that gives a child of God a song in the night. And children of God are going to have nights. They're going to have darkness. But it's that hope that provides a song. That hope, we're told in the Word of God, gladdens the heart. It can bring a sense of joy. Again, it doesn't remove the grief, but it does give some joy. It also triumphs over difficulties. It gives courage. It gives endurance. The hope, it confidence, and no one ought to be more confident than a child of God. We see in Hebrews 6 and verse 19, this hope serves as an anchor. An anchor keeps a ship from being wrecked. And this hope can keep us from being wrecked. An anchor prevents a ship from being driven away. And an anchor prevents a ship from losing headway already made. And hope, sir, in Jesus Christ, of course, is our hope. Hope provides protection. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 8, it is referred to as a helmet. It protects us. This confidence that we have protects our minds. Yes, the grief is still there. But we have a protection. We have something to protect our minds. You've heard people say, well, if that happened to me, I'd go absolutely nuts. I'd go absolutely crazy. Hope protects. Hope protects the mind. Hope protects us from ourselves. So it is true that grief can be unbearable. And it is true that God's grace is sufficient. And everyone realizes that in the hour of grief. Again, that doesn't take away the grief. It may not even lessen the grief, but it gives you the ability, the grace of God gives you the ability to bear it, get you through another day. And so we'll look next week at ways to, I believe there are scriptural ways to express grief, that is, for a child of God, lost people aren't able to scripturally express their grief. And if we follow scriptural guidelines, again, that doesn't take away the grief, but it will keep us from getting stuck there. If we just follow some scriptural principles, we won't get stuck there. The grief may be with us the rest of our life because our lives have been changed, but you're not stuck there. Brother, who was it that was leading singing? Brother Jim, if you'd